Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Guilds of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here again, or once again, with my beloved co-host, Steve Gagne, also known as B. Steve.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't know. I felt like jazzing it up a little bit.
Last name? So, there's no... I'm not anonymous anymore, Paul.
What, well, you're not anonymous when you post on Gubs anyway, because it says your first name, your full name, I should say.
And I got an adjective as well, since Antoine is not there. I'm the one rewarded with an adjective.
Well, you know. We're trying to make him jealous, you know, if he can come back.
And we did drive together for 24 hours. So.
That's right. It's like we're married in some countries now. Frick. Wow. Oh, that was a long drive. It was a pleasant drive, but it was a long drive. Not as long as Adepticon, though.
No. But it was easy drive.
Yeah. Anyway, what we're referring to, because we should probably give context here, is that we went to Nova Open, which takes place in Arlington, Virginia, which is basically right next door to Washington, D.C.
It's across the river from Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Everyone said Washington, D.C., and then when I tried to find the stupid convention center in Washington, D.C., it turns out it wasn't in Washington, D.C. They tricked me.
It's a trap.
Yeah, exactly. It's a trap. A brisk 10.5 hour drive each way.
Well, it was a bit more than that. It was almost 12 with stops.
Was it really even on the way back? Down it was almost 12.
Yeah. Way back was a bit faster.
On the way back, since we only stopped, to pee, and then that was like at a sprint.
And we had food in the car while driving.
Yeah. Like we wanted to get home. We were done. We wanted to get home. We should probably start at the beginning of the con, not at the end. So, what can we say about Nova Open? It was pretty awesome.
It was bigger than I thought.
Yeah. I expected something kind of more the size of, like, maybe Captain Con or something. I had no idea how big it was. But it was quite large. I mean, it's not Adepticon. And I don't know what the attendance numbers are, but it's quite large. It's a great venue. I really like the fact that you didn't have to walk through 8 million miles of corridor to get to the convention part of the hotel. You kind of just walked in the front door, went down an escalator, and there you were. It was broken up in kind of a weird way. It was really compartmentalized.
Yeah, well, because everything was on different floors.
Yeah.
So that... And it was all separate rooms. Well, Adepticon is more a separate room as well, but it's more on the
same level.
Same level, so it's less running around.
Yeah. It's but I don't find it was egregious, right? The amount of running around I had to do. Like, it was taking an escalator up or, you know, taking an escalator down. It wasn't the end of the world. And then there was kind of like a almost like a reception area, and then all the rooms with the events were off of that area. And on the lowest levels where we had the vendor area, the vendor hall was there. And then all your events were kind of spiraled off that.
And there was a huge room for 40K.
There always is a huge room for 40K. It being 40K and all. War Machine had a pretty good presence too. I don't remember how many tables there were there, but I know there was quite a few. And it seemed to be a pretty popular event for that. And then, of course, there was Guild Ball. And Guild Ball was in the kind of main communal room where there was like a bunch of different game systems being played. We saw the, what's the Star Wars game called? Not X-Wing. We saw X-Wing was there too. I think Armada was in there, but what's the,
Legion or Destiny or?
Legion. Yeah. That's the miniatures game. Yeah. Yeah. So Legion was in there. Lord of the Rings was in there. Malifaux was in there. Guild Ball, of course. And I don't know what else was down. I didn't go exploring that much.
A pirate game as well, I think. Like the big boat and...
Oh, Blood and Plunder?
Yeah.
Could be. And yeah, like I said, the Guild Ball was down there. The Guild Ball events were being run by Maurice and Aaron.
Yeah.
I can't remember their family names, so you'll have to forgive me for that. And I'm too lazy to go look on Facebook. They did a great job, I thought, running the events. We played in several different events. You did, what, two qualifiers?
Yeah, because they ran the events like Captain Cod. Like, you have a qualifier on Thursday, one on Friday, and the top four of each qualifier are in the finals on the Sunday. And there were lots of Falconers launch event. And there was another one, like a friendly Brewers Cup or something like that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where you brought beer. Now, I was a little saddened by the turnout for Guild Ball. I know Guild Ball's kind of, I think it's in a tough spot in terms of retention, player retention. People are kind of waiting for the new edition. I assume we'll see a spike once Season 4 starts again.
Yeah, probably, because now it's kind of a weird place.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have WTC and Last Chance qualifier at Steam. Well, actually, the West Nationals for the United States. East National that are going to be at SteamCon US are like the major big events are still in season 3, but everything forward from that is going to be season 4. So I think you see a bit of a burnout because we all know it's coming and like there's less point in playing competitive under those rules. Because
when you know stuff is going to change.
Yeah, especially since we started to see new players and everything. And season 4 is in 1 month.
Yeah, it makes it tough to run events, right? People just aren't invested.
Especially like with the change with the kickoff. Almost every game I was playing, like... Oh,
that will make a huge difference, that momentum, right?
Exactly. So people were saying, well, I'll receive, but if it was season 4, I would kick off because I get a momentum. And even if you knock me down, I don't care. So that one is making a huge impact. And people are like talking and making reference, like when you miss a really close pass, oh, I would have made that in season 4 because of the... new tap-in pass rules mm-hmm. and everything. So it puts Ting in a kind of limbo place. Like we're playing in the purgatory period of Guild Ball.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, playing in purgatory. So I think... what was the attendance for the two qualifiers you played in?
The one on Thursday was 6 people, and the one on Friday we were 10.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah. And you had one Falconer event at 12, I think?
Yeah.
The one you played?
And I didn't play the second one because I was like, I can't do this.
And the second one I played in and we were 8, I think. Yeah. But there were 2 drops after the first round or something like that. And then
it was funny because that event was actually quite expensive.
It was 15.
It was $15 US. And I, you know, when I signed up for it, I completely forgot that, you know, the Falconers launch events use the Falconers launch event rules. Which is
fair and balanced.
Yeah, it's cute, right? But it doesn't make for a very good game.
No.
It irritates me that launch pack, the special rules for it, defeat most of the core rules of the game. Like aside from ones involving like how to make a pass and how to shoot a goal, like everything else is just irrelevant. Intervening models, who cares? Terrain, who cares? Parting blows, who cares?
Ball on the floor, well, it bounces away.
It does whatever it wants to because you're playing Quidditch.
Exactly, and you want to charge a person holding the ball.
Fine, oh, yeah, plus 2 inches for charging.
Yeah. Exactly, there you go. Have fun.
Yeah, it was just not my cup of tea. So yeah, I skipped out on that second one. I mean, and I have to say, though, the opponents I played were phenomenal. And on the first... Was it the first day? Yeah, it was the first day. My last opponent of the day was actually Maurice, one of the pundits that was there. And we had a fun game. He was playing the Falconers. I was playing Season Brisket. Essentially playing the Church Guild for Season 4 that isn't a guild yet. And... I actually managed to win, but mostly because I think he was taking it easy on me because he knew I was frustrated with
the rules.
The event thus far. Yeah. Well, I was playing Rage 2 for the most part.
Yeah.
And when you're playing a combat, you know, takeout-oriented team and everyone can just walk away from you and not care, it makes it tough to play.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Especially really, like, with the no parting blow. I mean,
just... Yeah, you really had to be playing a scoring team So anyway, but it was still fun, and the people were phenomenal, I thought.
Yeah, people were really friendly.
And of course, it was always fun meeting someone who's just a big gamer, has the same type of gamer ADD that I have, and like switching games nonstop and always trying something new, or more accurately, like Antoine has, because the constant need to try to convince everyone else to play game X, and then as soon as they pick that game up, you switch to another game and then convince them to play game Y.
Who was like that?
Aaron.
Oh, okay.
It was his fault that we picked up Age of Sigmar Champions. He made me start thinking about Blood and Plunder. He was just pushing all the buttons. Apparently, that's his modus operandi, though.
Did we try Age of Sigmar Champions?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
How many games you played, Steve, since you're part of the online beta?
I don't know. I would need to grab my phone and check. Probably around 40-ish, I guess.
Jeez, addict.
What's so easy?
Yeah, so is heroin. right. But back on the Guild Ball.
Yes.
So why don't you talk a bit? I mean, qualifiers were qualifiers. You played against strong people, but the finals on Sunday. You decided to play a different team than usual.
Well, first...
Went back to your roots.
Well, yeah, first qualifier, I went with the team I'm most used to these days, the Hunters. And I finished 1-1. And actually, since the only person that was 2-0 couldn't play on the Sunday final, all the other players who were 1-1 kind of qualified. On the Friday qualifier, I wanted to do something different. So I went with Falconers. Mm-hmm. Didn't go too well. I finished with 1-3. So, but I've learned a bit more how to play them and everything. And on the final, as Paul is saying, I went back to my first love, the Morticians. But I didn't go with Scalpel, though. I went with Obelus. Man, he's good and fun. All fair and balanced.
Well, he's more fair and balanced now than he was, yeah, certainly.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not hard.
No, but he's so much fun.
Yeah, he's got a lot of neat mechanics to him, right?
Yeah. So...
And how did you do with that in the end? I don't remember the actual...
1-3, but the two losses are totally on me, and I won't know what mistakes I made. First game was against Falconers, so I kind of knew what I was doing and it was more easy to navigate around and like control and do what I wanted. And second game was against Jared, the guy who ended up winning the tournament. He was using Blacksmith. And he was using Anvil and Sledge.
Mm-hmm.
Some secret.
Jerry McGraw, right?
Yeah, exactly. And
he's been playing that and practicing it with the guy from that used to be on Strictly the Worst.
Jordan
Knack.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he's on the WTC team for one of the three WTC team for the USA, the East Coast one.
Okay.
And
is that team Deep Dish?
No, it's Thin Crust.
That's Thin Crust?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess Deep Dish would be the other side. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Deep Dish is obviously the
Chicago guys.
Chicago guys. And he was, it was Anvil and Sledge, Art Alloy, Vet Cinder, and Burnish, the last one.
Vet Cinder's so good.
Yeah, I played against him in the Friday qualifier, and Vetsinder charged Metagi, who was full, and I didn't defensive stance because I didn't have the momentum, but I said, yeah, I'm at 10, he's charging, he had only 2 influence, was charging, and he managed to spike his dice and hit the momentous 7
plus 3 from the sweeping charge. That's 10 HP. Bye bye, Matagi.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was bad. But on the final, I kind of knew a bit more what I was doing. Obelus went for a goal and, like, he did the 7 influence run, went for the goal, and was really close. I lost 12-10, if I remember. Or 12-10? Or 20. Just a sec, I'm going to check on Longshank, just to be sure I don't lie. I'm not a liar, Paul.
That's okay. This makes excellent radio, by the
way. Yeah, I know, huh? Well, you could do some 12-8.
Yeah.
And I could have won a game, but I under-allocated on Graves because he went in and tackled the ball from Vetsender, who was having the ball, and with the counter and everything. So I only put 2 influence on him, but if I had put more, I could have just like passed the ball to space. Nobody was able to pick it up except Valswarm, who had influence, who could have just take the ball, sprint the ball back to Obelus, and Obelus could have scored and won me the game. But
hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I know.
Let's not forget. Also, you hadn't played Morticians since season 2.
Really? Well, yeah, I didn't just
midway through season 2.
Yeah, I played a couple of games with Vetemlock, but like just 2 or 3 games to try her out. So, but I mean, I know exactly what I did wrong, and it cost me the game. So fair and square, and was pretty good game. And I did a really weird lineup, which actually turned out to be really good. It was a 12 influence lineup with Obelus, which is unusual. So I went with the 2 big guys. So I had Obelus, Valswarm, Graves, Vet Emlock, and then I had Ghast and Casket. So, and also 4 of my points were from a Casket time on Vetsender.
Nice.
Yeah. Pretty rewarding.
Exactly.
So, and then my last game was against Butcher. And I lost that one. I think that one I lost 12-10.
Who was playing the Butchers?
Corey H. Yeah, I lost 12-10. And that one again, I lost because I under allocated on Obelus. I only put 5 when it was 10-10. And if I had put 7, he would have been able to do 2 more attacks on it was Ox that was there. So I would have been able to generate 2 momentum and dodge and then score
right,
probably easily. And also there was another goal I tried to, because Brisket had a ball, she's 5-1, but I confidence myself trying to attack her and failed to do the tackle. Confidence, attacker, failed to do the tackle. Confidence, attacker, failed to do the tackle. So yeah, when that happened.
And where's your tackle in your playbook?
On 3.
Which is a 5-1.
Yeah, but with 5 dice, with rerolls, I mean.
Yeah. Still, yeah. I don't know what the odds are, but I don't think they're great.
Well, I think it was doable. And there was
Well, every time you roll 5 dice, you're not even guaranteed a 1 in 6 chance of getting, I don't know.
No, you're supposed to have 1, maybe 2.
It's like 33%, right?
Yeah.
So you know, 5 or 6 on, yeah, so it's 33% chance.
And then you reroll
each die, so yeah, I suppose.
So it was doable. And the second one, I even bonus time and I didn't get it, so it was kind of frustrating.
It wasn't meant to be.
It wasn't. And so he was able to kill Obelus with that one. So, yeah, and again, I've learned, like, well, it's actually, it's kind of dumb because Well, sometimes you under allocate to miss when we play games together. And I keep telling you, Paul, if you want to do something with miss, just don't screw and put 4 on him and that's it. You're going to like get your money worth out of it. And what do I do first time I play? Oh, I'll just put 5 with Obelisk. It'll be fine. No.
Yeah, but that's a little different too, because Obelisk is such a big resource hog. You know, if you've got 12 influence and he's got more than half of it, that's tough. Nice. Luckily, when I play my Union team, if I'm playing Rage, I mean, no one really gets more than 4, so I can still spread it around a fair bit.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when I play Shark, right, and Fish. If I give 6 on Shark, yeah, I've got 13 total, but then, you know, give 4 to Angel or 4 to Grayscales, or it goes quick.
Yeah, I know.
It goes quick. Yeah, and while you were playing in the finals, I was...
chatting?
No, I was playing Sean Dooley from Steamforge Games.
Oh, right.
We, he was playing the Falconers for one of the first times, I think. So we had a very casual, fun game, no clock. I think that was 12-2 my favor in the end. But he was learning a lot of stuff. Like, he knows the rules to the game, but he hasn't played it much, I don't think. Because he's relatively new to the company, right? Mm-hmm. And he's more of a administrative organizational role for North America. So he's not out there necessarily playing a bunch. So it was fun. And we get to talk a lot about, Steamforge and how they operate and kind of what the plans are. None of which I can disclose here. Because he probably shouldn't have been telling me. But it was fun. Good times.
And we probably convince him to have the East National in Montreal again next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's... you guys did an excellent job running that. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The event went really well. We had good prize support. You and Antoine are great organizers, right? You're very organized, so it helps. Like, we had everything set up the night before. It was really...
Well, with all really the smooth. Chaos Music and the Open.
Exactly. You ran huge events, right? So running a 32-man?
Yeah.
Running a 32-man tournament is nothing when you're used to running like a 300 or 400-person event, right?
It was never 300, but...
Was it?
No, it was...
Maybe thinking over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, it was... the biggest was in Quebec was 100-something, 115 total, so...
Per day?
Yeah.
Right.
But no, for the tournament, because the tournament ran on 2 days.
Right. Weren't the Montreal events bigger than that? For all the different tournaments because of the War Machine, the maybe. Team tournaments and yeah. stuff. Like, I think combined, the event was more people here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you only concerned yourself with the Warhammer Fantasy and 40K stuff. You were over there. Antoine was on the War
What's
Machine
Warhammer
side.
What's Warhammer Fantasy, Paul? What is it?
It was a great game is what it was, Steve. But it's dead now, and now there's Guild Ball. Now Guild Ball owns your soul. it was really interesting actually talking to Sean. We'll go back to that just a little bit. He's got a lot of interesting perspectives on the industry because he comes from Cool Mini or Not, I believe he said.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. So he organized events for them. So he's seen the industry from a lot of different points of view, and he's been doing this for like 12 years or whatever. So it was pretty insightful about some things. And we talked a lot about the Nashville SteamCon USA and what was the decision, like why they chose that locale and stuff. And after listening to him, I understand their point. And I wish, and maybe I missed it, but I think SteamScore should have just come out when people started complaining about the room pricing and stuff. I think they should have come out and said, well, we want to make it a destination, a place where you guys could bring your families and do stuff and not just be playing a tournament. Like,
Try to tag along the wife.
Yeah, well, try to make it more like a place you could bring your family to so you know, you're not abandoning everyone to go and play Guild Ball. Which is clever, because I think if there were more tournaments like that, then my wife wouldn't mind me going away to play stuff all the time.
Yeah, but basically, you're abetting them during the day, so.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough, but at least they're not bored.
Mm.
Yeah. It's it was, I think the heart was in the right place, right? Like the thought process may have been slightly flawed, but the intentions were good. So anyway, I think they learned a lot this year. Next year it'll only be better.
For sure.
All right. Is there anything else we should talk about for Nova?
No.
Awesome painting competition, if that's your thing. There was a lot of entries there. The raffles were amazing. So they do, people that don't know, Nova is a charity event. Where they raffle off a bunch of armies and, you can do, they have an auction, I guess it's kind of, I was gonna say it's kind of like a silent auction, but it's not really. So it's basically, you just write down what you're bidding on stuff on a sheet of paper in front of like a piece of artwork.
It's a silent auction.
Yeah, but it's not silent because it's got your name on it and it's got, it's not really silent at all. Cause usually silent auctions are anonymous, aren't they?
I think so.
Yeah. So it's hybrid silent auction. We'll make a new term for it. Hybrid is a good term for everything now.
Exactly.
I think it's really neat, and they raise a lot of money.
And the painting competition, the level was quite high because I managed to sneak a quick peek. And
I like the way they structure it because there's like three tiers. There's I want to say young blood, but I don't call it that. But it's like a beginner's, an intermediate, and a master's category. So you're competing against people of similar skill levels in theory.
There's a Steve, a Paul, and a Yom category.
Yeah, okay, sure. Not necessarily in that order. So I think it's really well done, and it's nice to have that separation because if you're an intermediate level painter, you're not going to be competing against one of the European painters or Shoshi or Matt DiPietro or someone who's clearly going to be better than 99% of everyone else who's painting. So that's always nice. It's a way to be more inclusive, I think.
Yeah.
And the other thing about the hotel, about the event, is that the hotel is super reasonably priced. I think a con hotel pricing was $95 a night US. Which is like unheard of for a hotel of that caliber, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look, I would say it's very comparable to the hotel at Adepticon.
And there were several other hotel options nearby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we stayed across the street at the Marriott, which was about $80 a night. And I thought that it was a very nice hotel.
And there was another hotel across the street as well. There was a Holiday Inn as well, just across on the other as block. Well.
Yeah. So. No, for sure. But I don't think I've ever seen a con hotel that's that nice at that price point.
And we were...
not during the peak season, anyway.
And we were 5 minutes car drive from Target, so...
Yes, which is the most important focal point of any trip with Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, Steve. It's okay. You've got a problem.
That's okay. I know it, and I admit it.
Yeah, overall, great event. I'm already looking forward to going back next year.
Yes, and for me, because the drive was super nice. Highway all the way. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'll do Adepticon. Adepticon I go to for different reasons. That's more of a social thing than a gaming thing for me, because a lot of my friends go to Adepticon that I only get to see there. So I may go or I may not, but I think Nova's definitely on the list for next year.
Pretty cool.
All right. So, let's talk some Season 4 card reveals.
Yeah, because while we were at TempleCon... At Nova. A couple of cards were revealed. They started to reveal Season 4 cards.
Well, I think they actually started before we even left for Nova, right? Didn't Snakeskin come out before we left?
I think she came out...
Or that was the day we were leaving.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think we read it in the car on the way down, didn't we?
Yeah, she was released. Can I see the date on that? No, I don't see. They don't put the date on the blog post. I cannot see. No date. Oh, August 28th.
So, yes, that was the day we went down.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're way behind on these card releases, and I'll be honest, I don't think we're going to go in too much depth because everyone else has already talked about them. right? Yeah. There's 15 other Guild Ball podcasts that have gone through card every card line by line, you know, play by play. I think we'll just do something a little higher level, kind of our thoughts. Yeah. Does that sound good to you, Steve? Okay, cool.
Sounds good.
And do we want to do, how do we want to do this? Want to do it in the blog post order?
I think we could.
Okay, so.
Snakeskin first?
Snakeskin first. I'm actually just going to load up GB Manager so I can see.
The old version?
Hmm? Yeah, the old version of the card, yeah. And I said GB Manager, but I really meant GB Keeper.
The unofficial app.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, Snakeskin. I mean, look at her. They've moved her playbook around. They've given her some more momentous damage, which I think is good.
Well, actually, she gained momentous damage. She didn't have any momentous damage at all before.
Yeah, that's true. She had none. And now she's got a momentous 2 on 3 and a momentous 3 on 5, which is great. Her stat line didn't change at all.
Nope.
You know, she maintained nimble. She lost clone.
Yeah. Which is... Well, she
that
was...
That might be because of the simplification thing, right? Like, they're trying to, trying to simplify the game.
Let's see. We'll see when Vitriol is released for the Alchemist, if she still has it or not. But yeah. It was a great... counterattack mechanism to prevent from keeping the getting the ball tackled from you, because like you do, if you got attack, you proc clone, and then you could dodge away and completely negate the counterattack. So maybe it was considered as negative
play experience.
Maybe that's why they removed
it. I don't think it was that much. But anyway, instead of that, she has Where Did They Go Now, which is an amazing ability still. And she can proc that off her playbook or a paid one influence, you know, for a 4-inch dodge. That's still really, really good. I don't...
Yeah, but then again...
I don't feel that lost that much.
Well, yeah, but she lost Shadowlike. So before, if she was engaged, she could disengage for free. Now, if she wants to disengage, she needs to pay one influence.
Yeah, this is true.
But she's still mobile. I mean... She's really a hybrid damage dealer gold scorer, I think.
Yeah.
Because she's kind of fast with 6-8 move, 3-6 kick, which isn't like that bad. And I think like she can score for sure. And if needed, like to do a takeout, well, she could, and generate some momentum as well, because now she has the momentous 2 damage.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at her character traits, she got Beautiful, which is the ability of Siren I don't remember.
Siren has it originally.
She still has it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for now.
That -5 range on character plays is going to be awesome. I mean, that's her defensive ability right there, right? Yeah. You know, she's Charmed Mail still, and Venomous Strike is still there. I mean, Snakeskin, we never saw her. There wasn't really much reason to take her. I think now it's not guaranteed we'll see her, but it's far more likely.
Well, I think she has a place in the 12. We'll see if we'll see her on the pitch, because
yeah, maybe in a Blackheart lineup.
Well, it's going to be depending really on what happens to the rest of the cards.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Right? We're talking
about one player, isolated out of all the other changes to the guild and all the players that the Steamforge has released so far are really unseen player of season 4 of season the, 3 for each guild.
The unsung heroes of Guild Ball.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, who knows if we'll see her more, but at least it's more likely based off what we're seeing. All right. So who's released the same day as her?
Next day was Salvo in the Engineers.
Right. Well, so what changed with Salvo here?
Salvo,
I don't see him very often.
Salvo got something he lost. Well, it's because from season 1 to season 2, he lost
Eratini.
Floored Bolt.
Oh, Floored Bolt. Sorry, yeah.
And now he got it back because now since when you kick, you have the you'll have one momentum. So even if you kick, because before, like, you could kick and then Salvo would knock down the kicker and you would be stuck there because you didn't have any momentum. So if you wanted to do something, you would activate sacrificing movement and be done with it, would be screwed. So since now you have momentum when you kick, you're not screwed. So I probably...
It's less of a negative play experience,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's why they give him back to him.
The other thing they changed was he got a bit more damage. So he now has a non-momentous 2-on-3. And where he used to have a momentous 2-on-5, he now has a momentous 3-on-5.
Non-momentous.
Non-momentous. Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, pretty interesting as well.
And what other thing that change was, well, it didn't change. He still has Swift Strike. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's okay.
And now it's only during your activation, and it's a 2-inch dodge. As before, it was at any time when you did damage, and it was a 1-inch dodge. So it's quite interesting because... Cast as that in the Blacksmith and also Ygritte in the Hunter / Falconers. So it's going to be interesting if they keep those trait, and it's going to change a lot of thing, because I used, with the Blacksmith, what I like to do is if somebody attacks you and he's 1-inch melee and he doesn't go base to base, you just do damage and then you can dodge out and you're safe. But now, since it's only in your activation, it's going to be harder to be safe, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's still good if he needs to disengage a model.
Oh, I know. And
you know, he can pop someone, do a 2-inch dodge out of melee with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, still go use his movement, go and tackle the ball or go and take a shot or whatever. Like, it's not terrible by any means. It's just different.
No, it's still good, and it's 2 inches of one. Yeah.
It is less flexible, but the increased distance, more, I think, make it...
and it's each time, so... Like, you can dodge really a lot now.
You can do it... Hold on. You can do that multiple times in a turn? I guess so, eh?
Yeah, because it's each time you do damage.
When it damages one or more animals, maybe... That's better than I thought.
And he can use a character play with his heroic, a bit like the Hunters with Blessing of the Sunfather, except it's only on himself. So what you could do is like spend some influence, do some attack, like do a tackle, then do one damage and double dodge if you don't get the momentous double dodge in your playbook. Or you could do some damage and then you dodge out. And then you can do a arrow to the knee for free. Well, for free, quote
for
unquote,
momentum.
For a momentum. And then you dodge another 4 inches. So you can disengage up to 4 inches away from your target.
What? Seems okay.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I think it'll open up some new play styles, right, with him.
Yeah.
Like, that'll be interesting. All right. Who was next?
Granite.
Yeah, no, I don't know much about Granite, so you're going to have to lead this one.
Well, Paul, do you know why you don't know much about her? Because nobody played her. Everybody, well, when she came out in season three, yeah, she was one of the new models for the Mason in season 3. And everybody tried to make her work and quickly realized she didn't work, so...
Yeah, it looks like she got some stat line improvements, so she's faster.
She's faster, and
she's got higher defense now.
And she has 2-inch melee.
Yeah, so that seems like all big improvements. Faster 2-inch melee, higher defense. She's
because
3-2.
They kind of, like they said for season 4, trying to simplify stuff for it to go more smoothly. They remove a couple of rules, like they add, because she could do an aura for enemy models for broken open ground as rough ground. Now they change it for 4-inch instead of 3-inch, so it's more relevant. And also, she used to have +1 defense if she was engaged by two or more models. So now instead they simplified it, removed that rule, and she's always 3-2. So,
which is better, right?
And also she had a rule like where she could jog for free at the beginning of the game. So, but they removed it and they put her faster.
Yeah, and she also lost a few boxes. She went from 24 down to 20.
Yeah, but it's okay. I mean, she's still 2-inch melee and she's still sturdy. So, yeah, I think she's going to be more there. And also, she has a close rank, which is pretty cool. It's the same thing as Grange. Like,
it's like an extra, it's extra good crowding out.
Yeah, exactly. Super crowding out.
Yeah, so you lose an additional die.
Exactly. I think she's one of the most improved that we saw so far. I mean, she's going to be there for sure now. Probably, maybe not in all sixes, but I'm pretty sure that with the work they gave her, she's going to be more played. And more seen on the pitch.
I mean, she's got some good control too, right? Momentous push on one, momentous knockdown on two.
Well, her playbook didn't change.
No. I know that.
Her playbook.
I'm saying, like, her playbook was good, right? But like the rest of it just.
And also with her, we saw a stealth nerf to Jakar because Gadden String, instead of being -4/-4 move and -1 defense, it's now -2/-2.
Yeah, well, I don't care about Gutton String because Shark doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, but I do care because Jakar.
Well, has it. Yeah, but that doesn't affect me at all.
But now it's Nerf. So.
It's okay. I didn't like Jakar anyway. All right. So after that, was it Plowman?
No, it was Anvil and Sledge. And the player that are never seen except like just from a couple of weeks ago. In tournaments by some players, they started to use them. But like before that, we never saw them.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because there was kind of a simultaneous
burst
epiphany about them, right? Because there was the whole Jared McGraw list.
Yeah.
With Anvil and Sledge. And then there was a very similar list with a different captain being played by one of the guys from Singled Out. Yeah. I know, the pitch. Sorry,
not the pitch. The pitch,
yeah.
So there's some secret Anvil Tech in the USA, I guess.
Yeah.
But he changed a lot. His guild ball play is closer. Well, not closer, but lower. And also, now he's more aligned with the other master because all the other master had one more tech than their playbook. So they had Brewer's playbook. And except him, because
he was the reverse. Yeah.
No, because
he was the same. He was 6/6. Yeah,
it was 6/6, but his legendary gave him +1 tax, so that's why they kind of compensate. But now he's more line, and his legendary changed because now he gains stoic instead of +1 tax
and tough hide.
And if he's captain, other player gained tough hide and stoic as well. Switch is pretty good. So, and
Stoic is the no push?
Yeah, exactly. Ignore the first push. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And also, he got even sturdier. I mean, before it was really, you needed to allocate a lot of resource. I mean, he's 2-3 with 19 bucks with tough eye. Well, now he's 2-3. With tough hide and 22 boxes. So
And he's faster.
Yeah, and he's faster. Right. So he got really better. I mean, he's going to be in my 12 for sure.
Yep. Did While the Iron is Hot change or anything? No, doesn't look like it.
The rest is intact. Is the same thing. They just shortened his playbook a bit.
And changed the legendary and up to speed. Well, he looks good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He was actually the model that most. Like, when I saw the blacksmith models, his model is the one that stood out to me most.
Yeah, everybody was like that, because it's one of the first we saw. That's one of
the giant shield. It looks awesome, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the model that came out good with the PVC plastic, so.
One of the few. Oh, wow. Well.
His apprentice got
Cheapest.
Got some steroid.
Yeah, he's been juicing.
So his damage is really buff. So it's 2, 4, 6, 8 because like Momentous 7 was not enough. So let's put Momentous 8 on that.
Yeah, all his damage went up by 1. The rest of his playbook stayed the same.
Yeah.
He retained Long Bomb and Pile Driver. And Pile Driver, so good. So freaking good.
And actually, because his damage went so high with Pile Driver, without rolling dice, if he's...
Momentous 4.
Yeah, exactly. Momentous 4. So if he has 3 influence and you're engaging somebody who has less than 8 health or less, you don't need to roll dice and you kill him.
So ridiculous.
And like with 3 influence, he can easily do 12 damage. I mean, realistically.
Well, it's hold on. It's on his next attack, Steve, right? So
yeah, but he gets one if he starts with within 6 inch of Anvil. Oh, he gets it for free. He gets tutelage, so he can do one for free.
The first one's free. Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
so essentially, with that, he can do 2 attacks without +3 net hits.
Exactly.
With 3 influence allocated, yeah.
Exactly.
He also got a box. He went from 12 to 13.
Yeah. And also, he lost knockback, but instead he got a new ability called Powerful Charge. So when he charged, you add knockdown to the playbook result.
Yeah.
But honestly, I don't see why you would charge with him. Because you're wasting 2 influence.
Yeah.
And you're going to sacrifice that +2 net hit. And the person will defensive stance for sure.
+3 net hits.
Will not counter attack. So you're kind of reducing the output damage on your first attack. And it costs you 2 influence as well. Exactly. Efficient. And you're going to end up with another just 1 attack after that. So I think it's better not to charge, but that's just my
opinion.
You're
not wrong, I don't think.
I think the only time you want to charge if you have the wing back card and you can charge for 1 less within 8 inches.
Yeah, or if you're in a situation where you just can't reach and he's going to be doing nothing otherwise, you might as well charge, right? But aside from that, you'll want to walk up and pound people to death.
Pound Agreed. Them.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wow.
He is named Sledge for a reason, right?
Yeah.
All right. So who is next on the card list?
Mr. Plow.
What's that name? That name again is Mr. Plow?
Yeah.
Oh, Plowman. A really cool model that we never ever saw, ever.
Because he changed a lot. He was overcomplicated with like putting the AoE, the rough ground and everything. So now he's more simplified. I think he's better. Much better. Now, once per turn, within 4 inches of him, he can another model can place 2 Arvorist Marker. Yeah, if you're within 4 inches.
It's also important to mention that he got the 1 armor.
Yeah, as well.
Because before he used to have something else that gave him an armor, didn't he?
Did he?
There was something. Oh, yeah, Mud Concealer.
Yeah.
So while within rough ground, he would gain 1 armor. Now he just always has the 1 armor. He no longer has Mud Concealer. Which is nice.
And they changed the name of the ability for a True Path for friendly models. So it's the same thing as Ebb in the Navigator.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's lots of change in this playbook because in the blog post, if people didn't read it, all the planter will have non-momentous 2 damage on the first column and all the Reaper in the Farmer's Guild will have momentous 2 damage on their first column.
Yep.
And there, since they won't have tooled up, it's all their damage will have tooled up, like already included in their damage. So it's like they're always tooled up.
Yeah, kind exactly.
Kind of.
And I like that they made his momentous, his 3 damage is now momentous.
Yeah.
And no longer triggers his Guild Ball play or his character play, but it's still momentous, which is nice.
And also, now his knockdown is on the second column instead of being the fourth. So,
yeah.
And he has a big weapon, so might as well use it not mm-hmm. just to put rough ground, but to
hit people with a plow.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds like a good plan.
I think he also lost a couple boxes, didn't he? Yeah, he went from 22 down to 20.
Yeah. Well, he got one armor, so he's a bit more survivable.
Yeah, I think overall, a lot of nice improvements to him.
Yeah.
Quality of life improvements, right? So I think maybe we'll start seeing him in people's 12.
Oh, probably, yeah. Because so far, unless there's a big change for Vet Honor, she's going to be the one that's going to be dropped from the 12, I think, in Season 4.
Hmm.
And the last one that was really revealed last week is...
trying to wet yourself, Steve.
Scalpo.
Yeah, she... it's funny watching you go through the motions. So when we first looked at this card, Steve was like, psh, she's garbage. Still garbage. Never going to play her. And then, like, he read the card and he read it again and he read it. Whoops. Oh, wait, that can be done this way. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, maybe she's okay. Like, oops. Oh, wait, no, now we can do this. Okay, no, she's kind of good. Oh, wait, no, actually, she's really good. You know, oh, wait, I can't wait to play her, you know?
And and after they released the blog post, I had more thought about her as well. And she's amazing. I mean, she's such a control piece now. It's incredible. Well, first off, we know that they nerfed Second Wind.
Yeah.
Because now it's, a dodge of 4 inches at the end of the activation. It's friendly guild models only. So until like all the major guild gets their minor guild, all of those who can include Decimate won't be able to benefit from Second Wind. So
we'll stop seeing as much Decimate, obviously.
Yeah, in other guilds than Union.
That's okay.
And also, she lost her Wake the Dead. I'm kind of sad because it was situational use, but when you were able to use it and put reanimate on one of your player to help them survive and make the other one, the other player spend more influence than they would need to kill and get the takeout, it was really useful. She lost that, and she also lost Tormented Agony, which was mostly never used because you got to remove influence from one player and put it on another one that didn't activate yet. Most of the time I was using it like on Boar or Rage or Minx if she had influence. Like people who can free charge, you just remove their influence, engage them, and they just stand still and look at you. But she gained a new one, which is called Spirit Bomb. And
which is interesting because as a control captain, it's nice, right?
Yeah, because it's a AoE you put, it's a 4 inches of range, and enemy models in that AoE suffer 2 damage and a 2-inch push. It's only once per turn. Well, it's a good thing it's once per turn, though, because it would be broken if it wasn't. And the thing is, I don't know, because what I realize is, if you do that, since it's a guild ball, and it's only on the fourth column with an attack of 7 with anatomical precision, means on the 4-0, there's a 50-50 chance you're going to proc it. Almost. And so you could do that on a counterattack, place the AoE over the person attacking you, and then you push them away, and they're not engaging you anymore. So that's pretty nice. But it's only once per turn, so you have to be careful, like, depending, do you want to use it when you attack to do even more pushes or when you counterattack? Because I'm saying even more pushes because her back of the card changed a lot.
Absolutely.
She lost her legendary. She lost Slippery, but she gained Voodoo String. So when she activates everybody within this 6-inch aura, when she does damage to an enemy model with one or more playbook damage result,
I choose any model within the aura, and that model has a 2-inch push.
Yep.
So she
That's
can.
That's important to note. You can only push each model once, though.
Yeah. Because so you can't push people 12 inches off the board without being.
That'd be hilarious. Broken and wrong, but yeah, hilarious.
It would be wrong.
For that 2 weeks it took for them to nerf it. Funny.
So now she can push everybody around as she please. She can bring, she can disengage model from cassette. She could push model into melee for graves or ghast, or
yep.
She can ping pong herself to another player as well if she wants to. She can bring somebody more close if she needs to tackle the ball or something like that to
yep.
Bypass unpredictable movement because she's still only 1-inch melee. So yeah, all sort of things she can do. I mean, it's going to be pretty crazy on the clock.
Yeah.
At first, I mean, like thinking, okay, do I push him, further,
yeah.
Closer?
It's good. Yeah, you're going to get caught in the tank if you're not careful.
Yeah, exactly. So you kind of need to think about what you want to do. And also, because it's lots of pushes, you'll be able to push everybody aside and make way for Bonesaw to run in the middle and score.
Mm-hmm. That's living the dream there.
Magical fairyland, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe they'll just give Bonesaw 5-0, like just flat up and get rid of that stupid rule where he has to score to have a decent defensive line.
Or maybe they'll just troll us and release him as is and say he's perfectly fine. I mean, they did it to Brewer's player with Stave from season 2 to season 3. So, I mean, why not do it to Mortician's player?
Yeah. It's also important to note her heroic play changed. It has the same name, but it's different now. It used to be her heroic play would let you do a free
second wind. Yeah.
Now it lets you any character play.
Yeah.
So you do second wind or spirit bomb. So that spirit bomb for free or for a momentum could be kind of cool too.
Yeah, because her damage is still consistent. Well, she has now her 2 damage momentous is now on the 3rd column instead of being on the 4th. And she lost her momentous 1 damage and push dodge on 3, which I'm kind of sad, but she gained more pushes. So I guess it would have been a bit too much if she had all those pushes around. Well, push
so now essentially she has a momentous 2 on 3 that also procs a 2-inch push.
Yeah.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, but she doesn't move. Or you could dodge if you want.
But it's essentially the same. Yeah. You end up with the same distance when you and the target model, right?
Or knockdown.
Except it's not even the same. Now it's not even. That's the cool thing about it, right? Because it's not the model you're engaged with. It could be any model in that 6-inch aura that you're pushing.
Exactly. That's why it's fun. Yeah. And she also has a 2 damage dodge, not momentous as well. So she could move herself 3 inches more if she want.
Or yeah, make a gap of 3 inches.
Yeah.
She's only moving an inch, but she's creating a 3-inch gap.
No, but she could, like, because it's a model, so it could be her once in her attack. Oh, she
push herself.
Yeah, so she can do 2 damage and a dodge. And if you're engaging a 2-inch melee, you can push yourself.
Oh, it's not any model.
No, it's any model, so it's...
Oh, that's even more gross than I thought.
Yeah, because it's your model as well, so it's the ultimate repositioning.
Oh, sweet Jeebus. That's going to be bust. I got to start painting my morticians.
Wow, that's going to be 6 influence every turn.
No doubt, eh? No doubt.
Yeah, she's awesome. Going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to play her.
That's going to be some fun playing, yeah.
I just need to poke you guys so I can play her and we do some practice season 4 game and I play her under the season 4 rules and we test her.
Under the season 3 rules, you mean?
4. Well, we could play with the season 4 rule we know.
We know most of the core rules, yeah.
Yeah.
True enough.
And like we see, like Spirit Bomb is 4-inch AoE, so pretty sure that like everything that was 6 will go drop down to 4.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, it's interesting.
It's going to be fun. I really can't wait.
And then I think that's it for now. We have other models. We have cards for other models, but we can't talk about those.
Yeah, it's going to be later. I don't know when this is going to be out, but we know the next one are going to be the rat catchers.
This should be out. I will attempt to edit the tomorrow night, the 10th, and get this out the 11th. That is my goal.
So probably the Ratcatcher's Garn will be out on that day as well.
Yeah. And maybe we can record another episode later this week or something.
Yeah.
Not recording forever and then, you know, do a bunch of episodes in 1 week. Why not?
Sounds good for me.
All right, Steve. Well, I think that's it for now.
We covered quite a lot.
Yeah. We rambled. We talked about cards. That sounds like a cast.
We talked about two kinds of cards.
That's true. That's true. So have people tuned in for our Age of Sigmar Champions podcast that's coming up?
I'm kidding.
Yeah, not doing that. All right. Well, I'll catch you next time, Steve. Take care. Thanks again.
Take care. Bye.
Bye, geeks. Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine at Eltonio Berg, Steve at B_Steve, and if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by Ladrave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find The Game Huntress. Wherever there's XP or achievements, The Game Huntress blog will always be on the hunt. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.